is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Well, welcome everybody tonight. This is great that everybody's here because we have a wonderful presenter, Mary Campbell with the Garden Company. Mary's got so much experience. Her topic tonight is propagation. And so without further ado, Mary, take it away.
All right. Hello, everybody. I'm Mary. I have a nursery up the hill in the Salisburyville area. We grow all of our plants locally, in case anybody didn't know. And I do a lot of propagation of various things. The whole idea with the nursery is that we try to grow things that work really well for people in the area.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but half of us can't hear you.
Okay.
Do you mind using
it? I'll try to be louder. How's that?
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
If at any time anybody can't hear me, please just let me know. I'll get absorbed in what I'm talking about and I'll forget to talk loud. So just don't be afraid to interrupt. So anyhow, as I was saying, we have a little nursery. We grow everything locally. We try to grow plants that work really well for people in areas like this, which aren't always the ones that are sold in the trade, obviously. So I have a background in horticulture, studied horticulture, and studied everything I get my hand on, and basically I'm just a plant addict. So that's really where more of the stuff comes from. I also want to say that I'm going to talk about propagation of native plants the way that I do it, and for the most part, that's what we're talking about tonight. I want to open it up for anybody who has experience with plants to volunteer their information, and we can all share what we know about it, okay? So anyhow, propagating native plants, so that's what I was asked to talk about. So basically, the idea is it's pretty darn similar in a lot of ways to the other forms of propagation that you guys are probably very familiar with. I mean, there's obviously seed, there's the, which is the sexual form of propagation, that vegetative or asexual form of propagation, which includes dividing. Some plants are divided, some plants are, you can do cuttings with, or, you know, there's various things. So those things are very, very similar. Why don't you go to the first slide there, dear. But in terms of like what's different about natives, okay, so big thing that's different about natives is they often commonly go through what's known as summer dormancy. Unlike a lot of plants that we grow in, you know, regular cultivated gardens, which grow the whole summer long, California natives will often go dormant during the summer, which means that the summer on some of those plants is not always the best time to propagate them if they're dormant. Sometimes it can work if they're fully dormant, but usually it's a semi-dormant state and maybe not the best. One thing that the growth pattern on a lot of natives is different in is that they'll start to push new growth this time of year, or you know, for like the last 6 weeks when the weather cools down after their little summer stasis. They'll start to know that it's cooling down, not as stressful for them, life is not going to be as hard, and they'll push out a little bit more growth before we get to frost usually. So that can be a good time to do cuttings or various things as well. So fire adaptation really, really counts when it comes to some seed and breaking dormancy, and that's not terribly uncommon in natives that they're adapted to fire. You actually have to burn things on top of them to get them to germinate. So they may have a strong need for sharp drainage. The medium can be a little bit different that you're using for propagation. Sometimes, especially in certain situations, they'll need better drainage. So, and then there's the mycorrhizal dependence. Do you guys all know what that means?
Yep.
Okay. It's, you know, so that's very, very common among California natives. Can actually be a help in propagation as well, can assist propagation. So let's see, what else was I going to tell you about in this
part?
Yes?
We don't know what that means.
Oh, okay, sorry. So mycorrhizal dependence is where California natives have evolved to work in a symbiotic relationship with microbes that live in the soil. So a lot of the drought tolerance and their ability to pull nutrients from nutrient-poor soils, a lot of that actually stems from having that relationship established at the root zone. So the mycorrhizal is microorganisms basically that live in the root zone on the root or in the root in some cases that assist with the challenges of being a California native plant. So that is one thing that can be very different from common nursery plants. All right, so go ahead with the next slide. Okay, so seed. We're gonna start talking about seed. I know you guys are familiar with that. So what are the reasons to grow things from seed? Genetic diversity, that's one big one. Usually when there's restoration plantings of natives, they really want to have a lot of genetic diversity because they don't want to have like a monoculture. One plant that's been cloned a million times may not stand up to disease, whereas ones that are adapting over the course of time may have a better chance. Some will survive and some won't if something comes along, a disease or a pest or something like that. So it might be the only means you can propagate a certain species is by seed. It may be impossible to do anything else. Sorry, I'm getting quiet again. I'll talk louder. So if you need a lot of plants all at once, I find that seed is sometimes the best way to go because they take up less room as small little critters. And also to get mother plants for later vegetative propagation. So that's another reason why you might want to start stuff from seed. So growing from seed, if you're collecting seed from your garden or from your yard, doing it from the wild has certain other things involved, but I won't get into that. But if you want to make sure that they are ripe seeds, they're usually what that means is brown and or ripened fruit. That they don't dry and crumbly more than fresh and green. So you want to clean them really good because of rot potential. That's something that can happen with when you sow them and there's a lot of moisture. If there's a lot of debris in there with them, you can end up getting mold problems or something like that. So one of the main things, of course, is scarifying. Scarifying, it is a term that refers to a mechanical, it's a way to imitate basically going through the digestive tract of an animal. So it's a mechanical manipulation of a seed coat. Stratifying is that's usually means a cold dormant period, and it imitates winter basically. So seeds won't germinate until they get to the end of winter. So there, every kind of seed really has its own needs basically, and you just need to make sure that you're kind of in the realm of those needs. So the medium that I use for seed germination is basically peat and perlite. There's a lot of other things that can be used. I like to use a little worm castings in it. Worm castings can sometimes help with germination. So you can go to the next slide if you like. All right, now I got pictures. You guys get to look at pictures, isn't that fun? So I've put up some examples of various California natives and the kinds of seed treatment that they might need to grow them from seed. So I will talk about those plants.
Can I ask a question real quick, Mary?
Sure.
On your perlite and peat and vermiculite, what's the ratio of that?
It varies a little bit depending on what I'm growing.
Okay.
Generally, it's for seed purposes,
yeah.
It's usually close to 50-50.
Okay.
For your generalized seed. If you're growing a desert species, you really want to think about using more perlite and less peat.
Right.
Okay. So,
thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, so these are all examples of native plants that where the seeds require no pre-treatment, no specific pre-treatment to germinate them. But that means you might want to time your sowing of it if you don't want them to germinate too early, you know, before we get to the end or anything like that. First here you have narrowleaf milkweed, which you guys are probably familiar with and grows around here. as a lovely, lovely weed. That, of course, the monarchs love. So Calycanthus occidentalis, that's western spice bush. Another one that you can germinate without necessarily stratifying. And I've germinated seed that have sat on for 5 years and have germinated it afterwards.
Can you say that one more time, please?
Sorry, that's a western spice bush. So, and then of course you have your ubiquitous buckeye. We all know that, how well that one germinates. And that's a good example of something that doesn't need any pretreatment. Falls on the ground, sprouts, right? So that's a real good example. I've got Aldus romifolia, so that's a white alder on the fourth picture there. Another one that doesn't need any pre-treatment. This is a pipe stem, so Clematis lacientha. Also another local native. And it's a vine that climbs up in the manzanita. You guys may have seen it. So blue flax, that's Linum lewisii. So that one germinates pretty readily, almost at any time. And then Wienothera hookeri, which is Hooker's evening primrose, very readily germinates.
Oh, yeah.
And without any ado. And the last picture over there is Monardella villosa, which is coyote mint.
Coyote mint?
Coyote mint. And that's another local native, another one that doesn't need a lot of stressing out about seed, pre-treatments of the seed. Yes.
So when you say California natives, like
yes.
Coyote mint,
yes.
Is that all through the whole state, or does it grow in a certain area?
They all vary. Coyote mint is quite ubiquitous. It grows pretty much across the whole state. At this elevation, it's very common, and lower, it's very common. If you get up into the higher elevations, you're looking a lot at some other species. So Odoratissima, which is, what's the common name of that? Pennyroyal, mountain pennyroyal. It's a Monardella as well. And that you'll see, they look very, very similar. They have a different smell, but they look very similar. But that one is very common. That's a very common plant.
So you could take a native from Northern California, bring it down here, and grow it? Or what I'm saying is that I'm trying to understand if natives are in certain areas in the state.
They are. And so this is an interesting area, and it's kind of another topic.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about it somewhat in other talks that I've done, but it is interesting. So some California natives grow almost anywhere in the state, and some of them extend all across the western United States, or even the whole United States. So those plants are considered California natives, but they're also pretty adaptable to all kinds of different situations. There are certain plants that are exclusive to certain areas, such as like a coast redwood. You can grow that plant here if you want to, but you are going to have to provide conditions that it can tolerate. So it varies a lot amongst species. But the one you were asking about, the coyote mint, is actually quite, quite common in a lot of different areas, foothill areas particularly. So it's very, very common. Okay, so these are examples of seed-grown plants. So, and when I say seed-grown, I mean either that it has to be grown from seed, or that is the way that I have commonly grown it myself. Okay, so first over here is Acer macrophyllum, so that's a big leaf maple, and that is one that I don't know of any other way that you can grow it other than from seed. You could probably graft it, but that'd be about the only other way to do it. And so to get those guys to germinate, the cold, moist storage means, usually a lot of times what that will mean is that you put it in a container with a moist medium, such as peat moss or vermiculite, that's moistened. Make sure that there's air circulation, and you put it in your refrigerator. I mean, that's common, the way people will stratify seeds. Personally, my personal favorite way to stratify seeds is to plant them in the fall and leave them outside for the winter, you know, and let nature do it. Because that's really what you're trying to emulate by putting it in the refrigerator. It varies a little bit. If something's really valuable, I might do the refrigerator thing because I don't want to risk critters coming in and, you know, the raccoons digging in the flat or whatever it is. So I might do that a little bit more controlled. But there, I start a lot of seeds by leaving it outside in the wintertime to stratify it, because that's a pretty simple process to overcome. So next down here we have Douglas iris, which is that's the iris that most of the Pacific Coast hybrids are bred from. It's one of the common parents of the hybrids. And if you want to grow that guy from seed, he's going to ask you for some stratification. So cold, moist period. And stratification is usually referring to cold, moist. Sometimes, though, it can mean something a little bit different. Some particularly difficult seeds to germinate will require a warm moist, followed by a cold moist, followed by a warm moist. You know, and those get really complicated. That's where you put those in a flat. You put them in the corner of your garden, and you leave them there for 3 years and see if they germinate. Because that's what you're, again, that's what you're emulating. Seasons, seasonality, basically, going through. But Douglas iris is not one of those. It's just a cold, moist stratification. So Verbena hastata, you know, some plants such as that one, and also the buckwheat next to it, which is umbellatum, so sulfur flower, they don't absolutely require stratification, but the germination will improve if they have it. You'll get better germination on them generally. This is Cornus natalia, so Pacific dogwood down here in the corner. Another one that definitely wants to have a cold, moist period. And that's another one where the seeds has need to be cleaned of all the pulp. So we can talk about that too. I actually, for that purpose, often we'll use a food processor with a dough hook in it for seeds that have a pulpy flesh on them. You put them in water and you put them in the food processor with a dough hook, which is a plastic blade. It doesn't have any sharp edges on it, and you pulse it, and it will take off most of the pulp and then strain them out. So that's a real quick and easy way to do it. Other way to get the pulp off is to ferment the seed in a bag on your counter in a Ziploc bag with some water in there. And as the pulp starts to ferment, it will fall off the seeds often a lot better than when it's fresh. So that's another way to handle that piece. The next plant we have there is fawn lily. And if you want to grow those from seed, a lot of people do divide them. They divide out because it grows from a corm, a little underground storage unit. So people will divide them as well if you're lucky enough to have them. That particular one is the species is Tuolumens. That is an endangered species, so you're not allowed to go dig that one out in the wild. So we have Weenothera longiflora cespitosa, which is tufted evening primrose in the white flower there. It's another one that requires a cold, moist stratification. Penstemon etonii, which is firecracker penstemon. And then, of course, the Aquilegia formosa, which is western columbine. And again, that's one that where you'll get a little germination or some with the fresh seed. If the seed is stored at all, and this is another thing, if you're able to sow fresh seed, then very likely you'll get germination. If you need to store that seed and it's dry, then the stratification period will help a lot.
Could you repeat the firecracker one?
It's the botanical name?
No, the firecracker.
Penstemon. It's a penstemon.
Penstemon.
Yes, penstemon. Hi.
I also had a question. The primrose that you said the previous slide.
The Hooker's evening primrose?
What is it?
Hooker's evening primrose? Yes, that is its name. Can you get it? After I'm done talking about all this stuff, I'm going to give you guys a chance to come up here, anybody who wants to, and play with plant parts a little bit. And anybody who has questions like that, I can help you with that.
What was the last one? If you said.
The one on the last one. It's the columbine. So it's a western columbine. All right. Are we ready to move on to the next slide? I think so. Okay, so seed-grown species requiring scarification. So these are plants that basically I have only been able to grow from seed. If anybody's got any other things to tell me, give me a holler. The Western Redbud, grown from seed. I'm going to explain scarification again. it's where you have an abrasion or a weakening of the seed coat. Usually it's seeds with a very hard seed coat, such as lupins or any of the legumes. So you need to soften that seed coat for the seed to be able to germinate. So what that entails is, in some cases it might be sandpaper, where you're actually abrading it, the seed coat, a little bit. It could be done with a pin, where you're just penetrating it so that then you can imbibe it. So you put it in, you soak it in water, and then the seed is able to absorb water. And in some cases, it might be the fire that we talked about, or smoke treatment, where literally there are seeds that... Bentil poppy is one of them. I do it as well with Asparalcia, mm-hmm. where you are planting them, and I do this with two terracotta pots. So a terracotta pot, and I have a medium. Usually it's a very sandy medium, so it doesn't catch fire, or just sand on top of a layer of a potting medium. And I sow the seeds in the sand, literally build a small campfire on top of that medium, and light it on fire. And then I invert the other terracotta pot on top of it, and it has a little chimney, you know, the drainage hole. And what happens is then the smoke penetrates that seed coat and helps those plants germinate. So that's usually when we're talking about plants that are fire adapted. And they have learned through the course of history to germinate once they get burned. That means the ground is bare, there's mineral soil for them, those conditions are right. Same thing with giant sequoia, but theirs is the cones open when there's a fire, you know, and drop the seeds, because the tree knows, okay, good to germinate now.
Do you use pine needles or wood chips?
I use pine needles mostly, yeah. And it could be anything that'll burn, really. Mm-hmm. But there is some indication that chamise is the best thing to use, especially for the chaparral plants, because that's what they're looking for, is chamise charcoal to germinate. Oh, sorry, you had another question?
How long would you burn over it?
How long?
How long?
The burning itself doesn't really have to take that long. It's more smoldering. Once you put the lid on, it smolders. But it produces a lot of smoke. And you can see it pouring out the little hole. And so, like we said, the Matilla poppy, there are several species. So I do it with the Desert Globe Mallow. I find it helps germination for me, which is the orange guy in the middle there, the kind of corally colored one, peachy. It's another desert chaparral pipe species. So it's adapted to that. Of course, the lupins, especially if they're stored, some will germinate if they're really fresh, but as you guys know, they boing out of their pods as soon as they're ripe. So you kind of have to collect them just before they're ripened, put them in a bag, and wait for those pods to bust open. And if you sow them really fresh, you can get germination on them before that seed coat gets hard. But if that seed coat gets hard, you're going to want to at least soak it in hot water soap. I don't think I finished with the, speaking of that, with the West Redbud, which is basically boiling water. You pour boiling, almost boiling water. You know, like take your tea kettle off the stove for about 3 minutes, and then pour that water on top of your Western Redbud seed and let it just soak overnight in that. So that's definitely a scarification. So I'm making mechanical damage, basically. And then the last one there is Dendromicon. So rigidus is a bush poppy. Again, fire treatment. This is one of the ones. So for germination, the recommended protocol. Fire treatment and 3 months stratification with a diurnal fluctuation from 46 to 70 degrees. So diurnal fluctuation would mean that nighttime and daytime temperatures are different. So it's a tricky one, basically, in other words.
So right now, the way the weather is, would that work for that?
Yeah, cold actually. Nights? It's interesting how nature kind of is doing it on its own. But if you tried to do that in a nursery setting, you know, that would be more of a challenging thing.
What was the middle flower?
Oh, that's a desert globe mallow. So it's a beautiful little shrub. Makes like hollyhock almost type flowers, but miniatures. Quite nice, quite drought tolerant. Not the easiest plant necessarily to cultivate, but good. A good one anyway. All right, so that's kind of what I have about seed. There's a million more things that we could talk about with seed, but I want to talk about so vegetative propagation, which is asexual or cloning. So you're basically creating the same individual over and over again, basically. So I do a lot of that in the nursery, and a lot of that is done because you're preservation of a unique individual. All your named cultivars, all of them have to be propagated that way. So basically, so if you have, for example, over here on the side, I've got a Cleveland sage. This is Pozo Blue. So if you want Pozo Blue, you have to do it asexually. So you have to propagate it by cloning. So what that does is gives you the predictability of a mature plant. I have a whole group of desert willow that I started from seed. And when people say, well, how tall do they get? I have to say, well, anywhere from about 8 to 15 feet because they're seedlings. So it's basically unknown how tall this one will get, you know. If you have something that is propagated with cuttings, you know what its potential is. You know, pretty much you know because it's been grown a million times before. Sorry, I just got quiet again. I'll get louder. So when seed is scarce or difficult to germinate, we just talked about some of the very difficult ones to germinate. Surprisingly, one of the more obvious things that's difficult to germinate is manzanita. So manzanita is far easier from cuttings than it is from seed. So an accelerated maturity, that means you get a blooming plant, a fruiting plant, in a shorter period of time. So those are some of the reasons you might want to clone a plant or basically propagate it vegetatively.
What time of year would you do the manzanita?
Manzanitas are hardwood, and I'll talk about those.
Okay.
I'll talk about that because we're going to go through some of the different ways of propagating. You want to go to the next slide? So division, which I know that as gardeners you guys are pretty familiar with as a process, that is probably one of the easiest ways to propagate plants asexually. So basically you're making one plant into a lot of plants, more or less. So over here I've got a Heuchera species. I actually brought a couple of Telema, which are very, very closely related. Those can be propagated by dividing. You just separate out the crowns that they form, and they will grow on to be whole plants. Of course, the grasses are familiar, or you guys are familiar with dividing grasses. It's a pretty common thing. So, and there's a lot of native grasses, and they can all be divided. The iris can all be divided. This is Penstemon rudbergii, which is a meadow Penstemon. A lot of penstemons can be divided. This one is an obvious one. It grows like a mat. It's rhizomatous. So rhizomatous means that it forms a lot of rhizomes. And all of those rhizomes have the potential to become a new individual, really. So it makes it a very easy one and a very obvious choice to divide. It's a lovely native that grows in the mountains. It grows in meadows and almost mat-like. Of course, strawberry plants, in addition to dividing the crowns out, of course, they make those stolons, which root themselves everywhere, you know, the runners, basically. So the technical term for that runner is a stolon, which is like a rhizome, except for that it goes on the top, on the surface. So it wants to propagate itself, and it makes your life easy if you want more of those. The wild roses I consider to be division because often the way you propagate those is to get the suckers, so you separate out the suckers. So basically you're pulling those off the side and making new plants out of those. And they have their own roots once you get in there and get them out. They generally have their own started root system. So it's a form of division.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. If you would like to contact us for more information, remember you can contact our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912, or you can look us up on the kaad-lp.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.